Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You guys, I am so excited. My new course on behavior, the Practical Behavior Approach, is officially done and ready to go. Enrollment is only open until April 30th. And if you are someone who is supporting a child with frequent challenging behaviors, listen in because this course is for you. This course was designed for any teacher, special ed or gen ed, clinician or parent working with a child with frequent negative behaviors. This course is going to prepare you with a comprehensive toolbox. You're going to have all the tools you need to prevent problem behaviors, respond when problem behaviors happen, and to build those missing skills. We go in depth into why behavior happens, looking at contributing factors like diagnosis, trauma, anxiety, and sensory needs. This is truly a cohesive course where strategies are rooted in the science of applied behavior analysis, but also rooted in trauma-informed practices. So you're going to have both perspectives to develop this really robust framework of strategies that is truly going to be effective. So if you are feeling burnt out, overwhelmed, or out of answers on how to support your kids, click on the link in the show notes and learn a little bit more about this course and how the training and all of the downloads and tools are going to really help support you on this journey to helping your child be successful. I can't fully express how excited I am to get this course in your hands. Click on the link in show notes. Let me know if you have any questions. And when you get started, let me know how it goes.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper Podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism.
Welcome back to the Autism Helper Podcast. I am excited to share a really great interview I had with Janelle Up the Grove. She is a BCBA and owner of Grove Behavioral Services, and we are discussing leadership and the role of an RBT. Janelle has some great strategies for effectively and successfully managing a team. She talks about decentralized leadership, radical candor, things that I knew nothing about and was really excited to learn more about these new frameworks that Janelle is really successfully using within her practice. Janelle discusses what the role of an RBT is. So if you're unfamiliar with this term, you're about to learn. And I think a lot of Janelle's strategies really apply nicely to the role of a classroom teacher on how they lead their team of paraprofessionals. So get ready to learn, get ready to have a great mindset on creating and cultivating a team that's empowered to each do their role and really take some of that off of your plate. So let's go ahead and hear from Janelle. Hi, Janelle. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Sasha. Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
So I'm excited to talk to you about the role of an RBT because we haven't really talked about it on the podcast before and really some strategies for leadership and staff management that I think will be applicable not only for BCBAs, but also for classroom teachers as well. Yeah. So thanks for joining me.
Absolutely.
So to kind of take this all big picture. Why is effective leadership really important as a BCBA if you are working in that in-home setting or clinical setting and have RBTs and really how that could be applied to maybe a classroom teacher with their paraprofessionals as well?
Sure. So typically in an ABA clinic, be it in-home or in-clinic, we have a multi-tiered model. So we have a BCBA who is usually in charge of the treatment and supervision and oversight of a set of cases. That BCBA usually has an assistant supervisor. And beneath that are RBTs, who are really the workhorses and the backbone of everything that we do in terms of direct care. So looking at that model and how effective it can be for treatment outcomes, because there's a lot of knowledge in that pipeline of leadership, that pipeline becomes a lot less effective if the person at top isn't able to effectively communicate and effectively lead their team and the awesome people who are working underneath them. So in a classroom setting, we have, a general education or special education lead teacher, and usually that team of really awesome paraprofessionals, as well as other support staff who are always looking to an individual who can kind of take point in a situation and guide, provide feedback, and just overall ensure that our treatment outcomes and what we're looking for and our best practices are what we actually achieve at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it. I like that, even just thinking about it as this pipeline of going from the BCBA down that line so we all are on the same page working collaboratively.
Yeah. And I think a great conversation point to make here, I don't know if you've heard of the leadership method of decentralized leadership, the decentralized model of leadership. It's something that I practice and I've learned over many, many years in the military, actually, which seems like it would be really unrelated to what we're talking about. But in terms of leadership preparation, it's been invaluable for me. Have you heard of the decentralized model of leadership?
No, I'm excited to hear about it.
Yeah. So essentially, it gives authority to the individuals who are actually closer to the information, the situation, what have you. It gives them specific authority to be able to make really valuable decisions in the moment. So instead of having a team of people who are entirely dependent on looking up that pipeline to their BCBA or their clinical leadership before making a decision, oftentimes that can be fear-based, right? They're scared to do something wrong. They're scared to upset their leadership. A decentralized model of leadership really empowers those below that main leader to be able to make those decisions. And there's a lot that circles around that, a lot of decisions that leader needs to make each and every day to empower their staff members. A lot of delegation, a lot of support, lots of really great feedback and communication.
Oh, I love this core idea, and really, like you said, empowering those that are right there, that are on the ground, that are working day to day with clients. They do have more of that information on what that client needs and how behaviors are going and things like that. So mm-hmm. to really have them be that point person feels correct, you know?
It is. And I think at the end of the day, when it's done well, it does nothing except positive, happy, wonderful, rainbow sunshine things, right? Not only is it going to improve those treatment outcomes because people are empowered to make decisions in the moment, but it's also going to lead to increased just professional and personal satisfaction, right? To know that what you do at your work, in your classroom, in your clinic is valuable enough that you can make some decisions. And that doesn't mean that those decisions should be outside the scope of a particular credential, but it means that whatever is inside the scope of that credential is respected and honored and given that little bit of room to grow.
And I think that's a problem that I hear oftentimes from RBTs as well as paraprofessionals, is not feeling respected in their role or having, that a little bit of autonomy to make those decisions, more feeling like, oh, I have to just do what I'm told and that's it.
Exactly. And I think that is, I'll just say it point blank. I think that's often a failing of our field. Mm-hmm. We're so good at understanding behavior, especially in the context of, neurodivergence and all of the amazing, amazing kiddos that we work with. And sometimes we really fail to understand it when it comes to the other, adults that we're working with day in and day out.
Yes.
And I think that just our social upbringing, it doesn't always set us up for success. We're really taught socially from the time we come up as young kiddos ourselves, right? To just keep the peace, not rock the boat, don't ruffle feathers, especially here in the Midwest, right? We always want to be good, kind Midwesterners. We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. And at the end of the day, that's not always the most effective way to lead, especially in a collaborative team where a kiddo's treatment outcomes are dependent on that team working together and being led effectively.
Yes.
So I think there's just a lot of room for growth there.
So let's scale back for 1 minute, because I think you did a great job earlier explaining this multi-tiered model. And those that mm-hmm. are not a part of the ABA world or, teachers or parents, can you explain a little bit what an RBT is and what maybe the day-to-day would look like for an RBT?
Sure. So RBT stands for Registered Behavior Technician. And at the most, you know, basic sentence would be they are the workhorse of the direct care provided to our clients. So they are the individual who works with a client the most hours in any given week or month. And an RBT can be incredibly influential in the outcomes of a kiddo's treatment. An RBT who has strong skills can really improve the treatment outcomes for a kiddo. And an RBT who doesn't have strong skills can kind of perpetuate some negative stereotypes about our field and also may not make as much of a treatment impact.
So they're hugely important. Like they're kind of everything.
Massively, massively. And they don't get the respect they deserve, you know. Yes. I'm not sure where you started out in your ABA journey, but I also started as an RBT. And I remember those days with not the most amount of fondness, but I sure remember them.
Yes. And it's hard. I mean, and yeah, I was an RBT before RBT was a thing, as I'm sure you were. Yes, hard, long hours, 3-hour shifts, 4-hour shifts. And it's challenging. And if you're not supported by the right team, and I've been in both scenarios, that mm-hmm. it's extremely hard if you don't have that support, because you're still learning too.
Yes. You know, typically our RBTs by nature are younger, right? So they're learning so many professional skills while they're also learning those ABA skills, mm-hmm. right? So we have a young person who we not only want to provide effective and quality care, but we also need to make sure that they learn how to show up on time for a session, right? How mm-hmm. to make sure that what they're doing is providing dignity to a client at all times. There's so many pieces that revolve and swirl around, air quote, a good RBT. And it's a lot to master. And I think that the responsibility for that good RBT absolutely falls on that leadership, that the assistant supervisors, the supervisors, the clinical leadership, all the way up to the owner of a company.
Yeah.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So kind of going back to this decentralized leadership, because I'm excited to learn more about this. So what does this look like in your practice with your team on empowering RBTs to own their role, make those decisions, and have that, like you said, happy sunshine situation where it all works out?
Yeah. So I really rely on effective delegation. And I think for anybody who has ever learned how to delegate, that is a rocky road, or at least yes. It was for me. I have an anecdote I can share, if you don't mind,
yes,
about learning how to delegate. I was, you know, as I've mentioned, in the military for many years, and a bit of a perfectionist, always wanted to do everything the most perfect, right Janelle way that I possibly could. And I was really fortunate to later in my career work for this really salty old senior chief, you know, old guy in the Navy who observed me just really trying to maintain control over all aspects of what I had to do with my team and how I had to lead them. And, you know, I had my little notebook with my checklists every day, and I had to do it all, and I had to do it all perfectly. And so he started talking to me about delegation and about what that meant and how to do it. And I wasn't really effectively putting it into practice. And it took until one day where he looked at me in the morning and he said, Janelle, if you do everything on your list, you're going to be in trouble at the end of the day. You better delegate. And he just kept a little fox eye on me all day, making sure I was delegating. At the end of the day, he said, how did that feel? And I was like, oh my gosh, I feel so much better because I mm-hmm. didn't have to do it all. Mm-hmm. And I learned that perfection is the enemy of progress, right? It really, yes. truly is. And I really, it drove home that I was taking away opportunities for other people to learn and professionally develop as well. And once I learned how to start delegating, then my new task that I had to master was how to remain responsible and accountable for the tasks that were delegated down. because we can delegate authority, but we cannot delegate responsibility. At the end of the day, I am still responsible for anything that happens on my team. So that became my new leadership challenge, was learning how to nurture others to perform these skills and learning that there were different perfect ways to do them.
Yes.
And that's kind of the great thing about leadership, right? There's just always going to be something new that you can learn and pass on to another, right? We always want to be training our replacements. You know, in ABA, we always say we want to be working ourselves out of a job because we do it so well. We don't want a kiddo to need us long term. And the same holds true for leadership. We want to work ourselves out of a job, right? Because everyone's doing their tasks and their pieces so well, and they're fulfilled. And I don't think we talk about that fulfillment enough and how it feels to know at the end of the day that you did a good job.
I agree. And I think that leads to, you know, avoiding a lot of the problems we have in the field, like, you know, high staff turnover and burnout, because we have people that don't feel fulfilled. And, you know, I'm a former classroom teacher, so I resonate with a lot of this from that kind of model of the teacher with the paraprofessionals in the class. And I had, in particular, when you're talking, I was thinking about this woman. I had a paraprofessional that came to my class. She was much older than me, didn't have a lot of experience in special ed. And everyone, you know how like teachers all talk, they're all like, oh, she's not going to want to work. She's not going to be a good fit for your class. And I realized quite quickly that she had been the paraprofessional for years that sat in the back of the class and like told a kid to stay on task. Mm-hmm. And when I gave her real ownership of goals and programs and taking data and teaching, she was a teacher. She was, you know, running goals. She would come in every Monday and put the dates on all her data sheets and data queen, because she felt fulfilled and she was seeing the progress her kids were making.
Yep. And I think that goes back to, you know, just, let's just keep this in the context of an RBT, right? It goes back to just valuing not only what they're doing in a session, but valuing who they are and what they're bringing to the team, because it is irreplaceable. Mm-hmm. And when we value that, then we do a better job empowering that. So
love that. Okay. So what does this look like on a day-to-day basis? What are some kind of actionable things you do with your staff, with your RBTs, so they start to feel that? How do you start to nurture that?
Yeah. So I, day-to-day, you know, that looks as simple as we have, you know, we're in home based providers. We don't have a central location at this time. And so we have a secure chat platform that we use to be able to communicate. And if a tech has something that they feel is important or relevant that happened throughout a session, we have them put that in that chat. And it's as sometimes as simple as thanking them for their observation. You know, if we can't be there, letting them know, hey, I hear what you said. I'll make sure I come and check in tomorrow. Or sometimes even just saying, hey, can you tell me more? Can you describe more about what happened? And then listening, right? Mm-hmm. I would say that's the most simple little thing we do. But also we include them in our, like our quarterly staff training days. It's not uncommon to see an RBT delivering training in our company.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And I mean, when a tech is up there rocking it and delivering some awesome, awesome training, even if it's a more basic training, right? Even if it's not like a complex BCBA level thing, it doesn't matter. It's empowering and it's impactful. And it's going to be information that somebody at some level of the company is going to need to hear no matter what. So let's empower them too, right? A lot of RBTs have so many amazing, amazing skills that we can tap into to empower them.
I mean, even if it's something, as you were explaining, like RBTs giving training, even something maybe non-behavioral on, you know, strategies for good parent communication and things like that could be so valuable for everyone.
We recently had an amazing tech deliver I cannot say enough about this training. It was fantastic, but it was on building rapport. Great. And it was research-based. It included fantastic, fantastic references. It was, quite frankly, a BCBA-level presentation. And she just knocked it out of the park with just that simple opportunity of, hey, would you like to do a training about rapport? Because you're really good at building rapport. We've noticed that. Would you like to do this training? And, oh, man, I was so proud of her. I was blown away. And those, I think so many techs are just waiting for those opportunities. And oftentimes, I think in tandem with our field and our science being a little bit closed off, I think mm-hmm. sometimes we also close off to our teams, right? Yeah. And we think, kind of going back to that younger Janelle who thought she had to do it all, right? I think sometimes our ABA education makes us think we have to do it all. Yeah. And it's just not the case.
I think it also, broad overgeneralization, but sometimes makes it hard for BCBAs to collaborate with other clinicians as well. That we're in that role of like, we do it all. Behavior touches everything. You know, I've been on many IEP teams and every, you know, speech stays in their lane, OT stays in their lane, but we integrate into everything. And I think that gets tricky then. And I've, you know, seen BCBAs that struggle on that collaboration piece because they want to do everything themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. And if you don't mind me sharing, I have a communication strategy that I've absolutely fallen in love with, and I would love to share with your listeners.
So, Sasha, have you ever heard about radical candor?
I have not.
I am super excited to tell you all about it. I am currently obsessed with radical candor. I have felt that all of my adult life I've been searching for this like magical framework or strategy in which I can improve my communication skills, something that is really actionable, really, you know, applicable to situations that are both professional and personal, inside or outside of, be it ABA or the military or whatever is going on in my life. And I recently found radical candor and I just fell in love with it. So I'd love to share that with your listeners if that's something you guys would be
interested in. Yes. Oh my gosh. That was the best lead in ever.
Yeah. And I promise I'm not selling anything. I just love it so much. So it was developed by a woman named Kim Scott, and she's kind of a big tech business executive experience. So it's not in any way on the surface applicable to what we do, you know, what you and I are doing, or even what my military experience was. But it just makes sense. And radical candor is this framework that helps teach you how to identify your communication style, identify the communication styles of whoever you are communicating with, and then improve those, right? It reduces workplace conflict, workplace drama, misunderstandings. You know, I say it helps us now to catch the molehill before it becomes a mountain. And it's just really been impactful in my organization. So if you'd like to learn more about radical candor, Kim Scott has a 6-minute YouTube video you can watch that kind of lays out the foundational concepts. And she has a 1-hour course you could do that's online. It's really well done. I've had all of my supervisors and assistant supervisors do it. And then in our staff trainings, I've actually done direct and explicit training about radical candor. We've done practicing, role-playing, and it's really helped my team to feel more comfortable providing constructive feedback and sharing things that we might otherwise feel socially uncomfortable sharing.
Oh, and that's something that really so many of us could use in so many different roles.
It is. It is. And one of the framework is a 2x2 grid. And the piece that is radical candor, which is what, you know, we're all striving for, right? We always want to be good communicators and say what we mean, but do it kindly, right? None of us really truly want to be jerks. I don't believe that. We just had our behavior shaped over time and what's been reinforced, right? And so with that, the square, I wish we had a video so I could pull up this framework, but the square that represents radical candor is orange. And so for anybody who goes and watches this and wants to implement it with their team, what we've found really effective is when we're in an uncomfortable communication moment where we want to practice growing our skills and using radical candor, we say, hey, I need to have an orange moment, or I'm going to say something orange right now. And we use that. We precede what we're going to say that might be uncomfortable, that might be stretching our boundaries, right? And then it just kind of turns down the temperature on the situation. The other communication partner can lower their defenses and say, hey, Janelle's going to try and say something that is maybe constructive, but she's doing it with positive intent. And I want to hear that. And I want to grow with that. Mm-hmm. So I've had really, really positive outcomes with that on my team, from, you know, somebody who's day one coming into the company to those of us who have been around for quite a while. And I just really recommend that to all your listeners if they're interested in a communication strategy that is really simple and really actionable.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to link in the show notes the YouTube video you mentioned. And well, I'll title that information as well. But I like even just explaining that initial part of the framework, taking away a little bit of the surprise factor sometimes that constructive feedback has, that it catches people exactly. off guard and then people go to defensive mode. So I like that it takes away that component of that.
It does. It does. It really sets the stage for, hey, I'm going to step out of my comfort zone and I'm going to say something that I feel is important to move us forward or improve yeah. situation X, Y, Z, but just defuses that. So people can immediately say, all right, I'm going to turn on my listening ears and just really, again, paying attention while assuming positive intent.
That's great. And, you know, my next question was going to be, you know, tips for handling kind of staff conflict or miss expectations, things like that. And I'm assuming that this comes right into play when you're having staff issues, whether it be, you know, minor showing up late or bigger, you know, not following plans, that this would be kind of your go-to then.
It is. And by, again, valuing every credential level in an organization and teaching this up and down those credential levels, it doesn't matter if you're brand new or if you've been here forever. It levels the playing field, right?
Yeah.
And so when the playing field is more level and everybody feels more empowered, that is going to make staff conflict a little less likely to occur in the first place, right? But of course, there's still opportunities for things to happen. You know, we're all human beings. But then encouraging that if possible, if appropriate, handle that at the lowest possible level by having a conversation, by addressing the molehill before it becomes a mountain. And at the end of the day, it's not going to, you know, perfectly prevent 100% of all conflict. Things are still going to come up. We're all human beings and this is real life in the real world.
Yes.
But I've found it to be pretty darn helpful.
That's great. You know, in thinking about, you know, you've explained I really appreciate you sharing kind of all these strategies that you utilize. And it sounds like such an effective and successful workplace environment that you've established. And I can imagine many RBTs listening that are like, oh, wait, I don't have that in my workplace right now. what advice do you have for RBTs that are in a setting that is not so positive and, you know, nurturing to their skill set and sometimes very often the complete opposite? What advice do you have for them?
Yeah, that's a really tricky one because I think the more complex issue at hand here is that most of us live in areas that don't have an expansive array of employment opportunities for a tech, right?
Yeah.
Most of us are not living in big cities with a wide, you know, variety of clinics and lots of places to choose from. So I think that overarching, you know, hurdle in our field ends up keeping a lot of RBTs in some toxic work environments because mm-hmm. they still care about the kids.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, they love what they do and they know that they're doing something meaningful with the kiddos, and we get so attached, you know? And so I think that ends up working against our ability to self-advocate mm-hmm. when we're in those toxic situations. So that's a really tough one. And I think that I would advocate for finding a mentor, right? Finding somebody, even if it's outside the field, who can help you kind of learn to professionally advocate for what you need in environment, but also learning when it's time to walk away and maybe do something different. And that doesn't have to be, you know, I'm not saying make a huge career change, you know, off the cuff, but I'm just saying really thinking through, is this work environment right for me?
Yeah.
Is there something else adjacent to this that might be less toxic? Because at the end of the day, we still have to go home and we still have families. Mm-hmm. We still have lives that, you know, need our attention and they need our nurturing. And we can't do that if we're burned out and miserable at work.
Yeah.
So
that's really good advice.
Yeah. And it's a tough one, but I would also say, don't be afraid to be a little bit picky when looking for a clinic, right? Don't be afraid to be picky and say, you know what? I don't know that you meet my standards. You don't have to jump at every employment opportunity. It's okay to take your time.
Yeah.
It's okay to interview around. It's okay to ask for more money when you get an offer, right? Mm-hmm. No one says those things out loud, but it's okay. It's okay to do that. So I think that's important as well.
Segueing on that, what should an RBT be looking for when they're interviewing or types of questions to ask to get like some insight into the workplace culture and environment?
Yeah, that's a great question. I haven't interviewed as an RBT in a long time.
I know, right? throwing this at you.
But I would say, I think right now our field is going through this big, beautiful, and necessary cultural shift towards compassion, towards what, you know, I dare I say, air quote, new ABA, right?
Yes.
We're getting away from the things that have not been healthy about our field and that so many autistic voices have really bravely spoke up about and advocated against, right? So I would say that if those things are on your mind and you're looking for a healthy work environment, if I were the interviewee, I'd be asking a lot of questions about the mindset of the company, right?
Yes.
Tell me about, what is your mindset about XYZ? How do you feel about work-life balance? And I'd be really trying to get the temperature on those mindsets, because at the end of the day, when those mindsets are off center and they don't skew towards valuing every individual in that company, that's where that toxicity starts getting set up and the burnout starts happening and then the turnover starts happening. And it's just a vicious cycle.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Janelle, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation. You can't see me, but I'm like been over here nodding the whole time, but thank you so much. I think it's been really valuable to discuss what that leadership role looks like from the BCBA down to the RBT and really also what an RBT's position looks like. Cause I know in a lot of special ed teachers have been making moves to the ABA field and kind of vice versa too, you know, becoming yeah. teachers as well. So I love that you've shared new strategies that, you know, maybe aren't under the umbrella of what we typically think of as education or ABA leadership strategies and bringing those new frameworks into practice. I'm definitely going to link the Radical Candor in our show notes. So I so appreciate you sharing your insights today.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun to just talk about and share my perspectives. And I really appreciate the opportunity.
Can you share where your website and where people can go to hear more from you?
Absolutely. So my company is called Grove Behavioral Services. We are located in kind of East Central Wisconsin. So we're a little bit out of your Chicago area. But you can find us at grovebehavioralservices.com or Grove Behavioral Services on Facebook and Instagram.
Thanks so much. I mean, if anyone's nearby, I think they're going to be applying to be an RBT at your company. I mean,
well, I'd love
it
to
sound
have
so great. Well, thanks again, Janelle.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.